I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. On this 25th Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we will look back at civil rights in this country, ahead to the next civil rights movement or movements. But first, we want to commemorate the birthday of the Reverend Dr. King, who was, of course, struck down by an assassin in 1968. 4 days after King's death, Congressman John Conyers of Michigan introduced legislation to create a national holiday in King's honor. It took 15 years before the holiday legislation was passed and signed into law by President Ronald Reagan. The first King Day observation was in 1986. We wanted to talk more about the King holiday and assess the nation's progress in observing the legacy of Dr. King, so we've called upon Lonnie Bunch. He's an historian and the founding director of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, which will open its doors here in Washington, D.C. in 2015. Lonnie Bunch, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you.
What's the right greeting for today? Is it Happy Martin Luther King Day or Have a Reflective Martin Luther King Day or
Happy Belief in the Possibility of America Day.
So let's just start by what you think Martin Luther King's legacy means.
Well, I think what's so powerful about Martin Luther King's legacy is that we realize that now he's been dead longer than he lived. And yet we're still talking about Martin Luther King and what he did. And I would argue that in some ways, his leadership really helped America confront race in ways that it had never done, and that really sort of articulated the desires of millions of Americans to see a change. It's rare that somebody actually gets to transform America, and I think King played a major role in that.
You know, we're speaking at a distinct historical moment. Of course, the first African-American president is just about in the middle of his term at this point as we're speaking. We know that he has a bust of Dr. King in the Oval Office. We know that there's a quote by Dr. King on the rug in his office, which was custom made. And we also know that there are many people who felt that his presidency would usher in a post-racial era. But for some reason, we seem to be talking about race as much, if not more, than we have in the past. And I just wondered if you have thoughts about that.
Well, I think it's naive to think that we'd ever have a post-racial period in American life. I think what's important is that what Barack Obama allows us to do is continue a conversation that began with an unnamed slave or Frederick Douglass or W.E.B. Du Bois. And that conversation now becomes even more meaningful because we realize that change is possible. And I think that Obama symbolizes the fact that there can be an America fundamentally different than anybody could have ever expected.
But it is true. And I just want to ask you to think for a minute about the state or the condition of African Americans in this country today. I mean, on the one hand, there is an African American man in the White House, our highest office, the commander in chief. And yet we find that, you know, the jobless rate for African Americans far higher than the national average. In fact, one of those statistics that popped out last year that just gave a lot of people pause, the jobless rate for college educated African American men, while lower than the general population, twice that of college educated white men. And so people look at something like that and they think, what does that mean? What is going on here?
Well, what it tells us is that we're really not in a post-racial America, and that what really we have to look at is the fact that one of the major changes from the time of Martin Luther King to now is really that widening gulf between a middle class, whether it's black or white, and a lower class of African Americans trapped in cities or trapped in rural America, and that in essence, the challenge is that King was able to help us address the most obvious manifestations of race. Now the challenge is, how do we address those deeper issues of economics, of a belief that change is possible despite where you are in your life and your community?
But the irony is that some people invoke Dr. King's address and his vision as an argument for why we shouldn't be talking about race at all.
I think that's right. I think that the notion of talking about the content of one's character rather than the color of one's skin is really a powerful notion. But what King was saying is that's the goal. That's not the reality. And I would argue that that's where we still are. That, yes, that there are now greater opportunities than ever before for certain of us. But the opportunity, the argument of making that color of one's skin doesn't matter or doesn't have the impact that it once did, that's absolutely wrong.
On this Martin Luther King Day, we are speaking with renowned historian Lonnie Bunch. We're talking about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., 25 years since the first such holiday. And, you know, as an historian, just as an aside about the holiday, have you observed a change in the way the holiday is observed over the years?
I think what's happening is that initially there was this great desire to sort of use the holiday both to celebrate King, but also to sort of encourage people to think about change and their involvement in change. I think what has happened over the years is that now we focused on elements of King's life, and I'm not convinced that today we think of the holiday in the way that I know Martin Luther King would have preferred, which is really a point of motivation to continue people to struggle for changing to make America better.
At the museum, for example, the museum is not open yet as a sort of a physical structure. First, I'd like to ask you to tell me about it, and I'm also wondering how you think that institution will observe the day.
Well, I think that already the museum is open, it just doesn't have a building. And so we do a lot of programs, and our thinking around Martin Luther King is really about how does Martin Luther King's life inspire us as individuals or collectively to sort of demand that America live up to its ideals. What's so powerful about and humbling, quite candidly, about creating a National Museum of African American History and Culture is that on the one hand, you want to create a museum that really allows Americans and the millions who will come in to revel in African American culture, to understand the richness of the culture, but also to use that opportunity to confront our tortured racial past. But what makes it distinct is the fact that we want to use African American culture as a lens to understand what it means to be an American, which means that this is not an ancillary story. This is not the story of a people on the side. We're saying that this is the story that profoundly shaped who we are as Americans. Our notions of spirituality, equality are all shaped by that. So for us, what makes us different is that we argue this is the quintessential American story.
There are those who argue that institutions like this are just a way to beat white people with the guilt stick. And so the question I have for you is how do you make an institution like this one that is indeed, you know, welcoming, but still tells the truth that it is meant to tell?
Well, I think this notion of actually framing it so that it really is everybody's story, so that we learn how our notions of citizenship, our notions of equality are shaped by this. And then I think what you also need to do is recognize that you can't create an institution where all you do is say, look how bad it is. But rather, the richness of the African-American community is that wonderful tension between those moments of real sorrow and disappointment and that sense of resiliency that really is at the core of who Americans think they are. So our sense is pretty simple, is that we recognize that being part of the Smithsonian allows you to have millions of people visit who may never visit another museum in their lives. So what we want to do is create an environment that says, yes, you will be challenged, but also you'll see how this is the story of your life, regardless of whether you're black, white, been in this country for 100 years or 20 minutes ago.
In just a minute, we're going to talk to another group of guests about this. But before we let you go, I would like to hear your thoughts about what you think the new civil rights struggle of our time is, if indeed there is a new one.
Well, I think there are several areas that we're moving towards. I mean, clearly the notion of how we deal with issues of sexuality, I think that's really a new movement, a movement that is going to be crucial for our understanding. I would argue that the movement that we're really looking at is how do we create economic democracy? How do we create an opportunity for people to continue to believe that change is possible, that America can be a place where they can have an access to the American dream? So really continuing the work of others to say, how do we almost build on King's notion of Resurrection City in 1968 to say that we now have to focus our attention on making concrete the opportunity to be part of the American dream?
Forgive me, before I let you go, I know you're still in the process of acquiring objects for the museum. Is there something that you have already of which you are particularly proud that you'd like to tell us about to kind of whet our appetite for when the building finally is a reality and opens its doors?
There's so much that we've been able to collect, but what I find most powerful was that a collector called me and said he had material from Harriet Tubman. And I didn't think that there was any material of that wonderful woman's life.
Harriet Tubman being, for those who perhaps, as you said, just got here 20 minutes ago.
That's right. Harriet Tubman is really an icon of the abolitionist movement, a woman who was born enslaved in Maryland, who basically lived her life freeing other African Americans, going into the South, using the, quote, Underground Railroad to bring people to freedom. And so no one had material. And this man said, here's a box. And in this box, he pulled out clothing that he had, pictures of her taken at her funeral and with her family. But then he pulled out her hymnal. And if you remember, when Harriet Tubman used to go into the South to get people to leave the plantations, they would sing spirituals, Steal Away Jesus, or Crossing the River Jordan. So to have her hymnal, even though she couldn't read, but to have this hymnal that listed the songs that she used to change and let people know it was time to go was so moving that I cried. And historians don't cry much. I cried a lot.
Lonnie Bunch is an historian. He's the founding director of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. It's scheduled to open its doors in the year 2015. His latest book is Call the Lost Dream Back, Essays on History, Race, and Museums. And he was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studios on this Martin Luther King Day. Lonnie Bunch, thank you so much for joining us, and happy Martin Luther King Day to you.
And same to you, and thank you for having me.